This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports with Balls. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
Reached the dribble, handoff to Miguel. Gives it right back to Juju in the paint. Gillespie in the corner with a trip.
Oh, tough.
Got it. Wow.
He stepped into the deep corner and nailed that three.
Under six to play. Gillespie drives in, drops the pass for Juju, and a slam with both hands. He'll launch an NBA type three. That's no good. The follow is no good. And the rebound by Julian Reese. And the Terps have come to Lincoln, Nebraska, and knocked off the Huskers tonight. 83-75 is the final.
And I was really impressed with our guys that every time they made a run, you know, we had a big time answer. And it shows you that we've grown up a little bit as a team. We've grown up. We didn't get too razzled at all. We just kind of stayed into it, made some big plays. And give them some credit, too, because they made some big shots, too.
Vinny and Haney back on 105.7 The Fan on this Featured Artist Friday, playing the Dave Matthews Band. Dave Matthews Band all the way up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Cordell Woodland in for Bob Haney again today here with Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw behind the glass. Terps get the 83-75 victory over Nebraska last night. You heard that audio courtesy of the Terrapins Radio Network right here on The Fan. Johnny Holiday on the call. Terps led by Derek Queens, 24 points. Also had a double-double in the game as well. I think he had 11 rebounds to go along with the 24 points. But double-digit scores for all five of their starters. Didn't get anything out of the bench, but what else is new? Only three guys got off the bench last night. And you heard Kevin Willard say it right there coming in. Every time Nebraska made a run, the Terps answered, especially in that second half. And Juju staying out of foul trouble, 13 points, 12 rebounds for himself. Selton Miguel, 17 points, hit three-pointers. Jacoby Gillespie, 15, hit three-pointers as well. Also had seven assists, and Rodney Rice with 14. And that was my biggest fear, was Nebraska likes to try to get into the paint, which they did a lot of last night. They didn't have a lot of success doing it. Credit to Juju Reese doing a good job of rim protection at two blocks last night. But I was worried about the foul trouble because I knew Nebraska would come downhill. And I think it worked out for the Terps that the refs were really letting them play a lot last night. So no foul trouble for the big guys. And the starters really got to carry them to the finish line.
Well, the thing is, Cordell, I mean, they hit almost 59% of their field goals.
I think they shot 60-plus percent in the second half.
It was crazy because every time they – they were saying that Nebraska would make a run, then the Terps had hit a three, or, you know, Queen had hit a two. I mean, it was crazy. Just watching it, it was like, damn, they're not missing. You know, and, I mean, they hit almost 47% from three-point land.
Right.
So – I mean, they liked those baskets in Lincoln. Let me just say that.
Yeah, to do that on the road, very impressive. You know, you heard all week Kevin Willard talking about how hard it is to play there and how he was a little bit worried about Fred Hoiberg's defense and the looks that they were going to throw at them. But it seemed like they had an answer for everything. And let's be honest, the big men were great. But what makes this team complete or have a chance to be one of those elite teams in all of college basketball is when everyone's clicking. You know, Selton Miguel, we've ragged on him in the past on this show. When he's off, he keeps shooting. But when he's dialed in, he's dialed in. And you saw it right from the jump last night, some huge threes. Gillespie hit some big threes. Rodney Rice with some clutch buckets down the stretch. So, I mean, everyone got involved. They weren't leaning on just one person. And I was thoroughly impressed. And, you know, you talk about foul trouble and stuff like that. Things could have got away from them in the second half. Julian Reese called for that technical. I don't know what the heck happened on that.
That was bogus.
I mean, unless something didn't get picked up by the mic, I didn't hear an expletive or anything like that. Just seemed like he was letting out a yell of aggression and thought he should have had the end one. But that could have been a huge swing there in favor of Nebraska. The crowd was as loud as it had been all night at that point. And Maryland goes right back down the court and hits a three. Huge.
Yeah, it's a couple of things. Number one, we played a cut yesterday from you guys' interview with
Willard,
and he had talked about Nebraska's defense, and they did exactly that. You saw a lot of traps in the corners. They somehow forced the ball in the corners, and they did trap them quite a bit. It turned into 12 turnovers for the Terps, and they're not a team that deals with a lot of those turnovers, at least in the conference. So that was one. And also the fact that, you know, they were so good from the line, 14 for 18 at the free throw line as a team, Derek Queen 6 for 6 on his own. They just didn't allow the Cornhuskers to really claw their way back as much as they did. And like you said, for them to do it on the road in that environment, so much is made with that, you know, they struggle on the road narrative. And look, that's going to be there until it's no longer an issue for them. But winning games like that, it really gives you confidence for this team going forward, because that was a hostile environment yesterday. And we know basketball is a game of runs. And I was just really impressed at how they kind of kept their foot on their neck and didn't allow them to get that last lifeline that they needed.
And some people might disagree, but outside of that Reese technical, I mean, I thought the Terps kind of got some favorable whistles in the second half. I mean, they were in the bonus with almost 10 minutes left to play. Nebraska took them probably until the final 4 or 5 minutes to get in the bonus. So usually don't see that as a road team, but they got the chance to make the free throws, and that was the difference.
Yeah, I do love the fact that Derek Queen was able to build on that Rutgers game, because that was the one thing I brought up yesterday. You know, if he's going to look like that, yeah, he might as well declare. He might as well declare. I'm kind of changing my stance now with this groove that he's gotten in, and obviously we'll see how the season finishes and what the two tournaments look like. But if he's going to play like this, you know, he could definitely work his way into the lottery, because I started while I'm watching the game last night, I got to thinking about it. Like, when they get into the combine and they get on and they roll the ball out there and they start running their 5-on-5 scrimmages, he's probably going to be a top two player on the court at all times. So I think he's going to be able to work his way into the lottery the further this process goes on, if he can maintain this level. But he just strikes me as a guy that when he feels like they need it, or when he feels like he has to turn it on, he can play his best basketball. So I'm really excited to see what he looks like in the combine when they roll the ball out there and it's on NBA TV and we're seeing some of these scrimmages, because I think he could have a chance to be one of the best players on the court.
How did he lose the 40 pounds?
Probably by running around. I couldn't tell you. Hitting that treadmill.
Because he's, you know, like, when you saw him at the beginning of the year and stuff, I mean, he didn't look like that fluid. Now he looks much like he's used to that body weight now or something, because he looks much quicker and much more fluid moving his body around, I think, anyhow. I mean, because, I mean, he's playing, like, his level is pretty good right now, you know, and if he can continue that, you know, they've got legit star going down the road here, which you need that going into the tourney.
And I will give credit to Coach Willard and his staff, because the starters pretty much played the entire game yesterday. At no point in that game did I get the idea that they looked tired. At no point. At no point. And this is what they do. This isn't new. This is how they play all year. And I haven't had to question their conditioning to this point. Now, granted, it'll be different when you get into the conference tournament and you're playing every day, or you get into the NCAA tournament and you're playing every other day. But right now, a credit to them, conditioning doesn't seem to be a problem, especially considering what's being asked out of them right now.
Well, it's good for them to get used to it. You know, I mean, Willard, I think, has talked about it earlier this year. And sure, he'd like more from his bench. You know, you were down Gapari last night, so that doesn't help. But,
yeah.
I mean, they do get they're kind of locked into the schedule recently where they play Thursdays and Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you got some downtime there between Sunday and Thursday to rest up, two games a week. You know, it is different when you're playing back-to-backs or two games in the span of 3 days like you would in the tournament. But by the time the season gets to that point, these guys are so juiced up and amped up that it probably shouldn't matter. And, you know, go back to Queen as a freshman. I mean, his conditioning, yeah, no signs of him wearing down. I mean, the only thing that I would say as a knock on his game this year would be sometimes he lets things get in his head a little bit, or he'd kind of start chirping with the refs. And last night there was a moment where he wanted to, mm-hmm. where they called him out of bounds, and then Reese came over and said, hey, knock it off. The rest of the game, he was dialed in.
And I think it was for a travel because, I honestly was with him. I'm like, he does that move every single time. If it is a travel, call it every time he does it. But he does it a lot when he gets the ball kind of on that high post and he, you know, uses his pivot foot. But yeah, Reese definitely pulled him out. You could tell Reese has that voice for the group. You know, when he says something, a lot, you don't see a lot of back talk from a lot of the other guys.
Queen don't have no problem in the NBA with that. With that move, they don't call traveling at all.
No, they don't. They don't call traveling at all. He seems. I mean, he has an NBA style of play. I think one of the commentators last night was saying if this were the 80s or the 90s, he'd be locked in as the number one pick with the way that he plays. But even in this day and age, the way that the game is played, big men are being asked to do a lot more, and you have to be able to be versatile. You got to be able to switch 1 through 5 and handle the ball and shoot the ball from outside. And it's really no weaknesses to his game right now. And the fact that that post-up fadeaway jumper has become very dangerous for him, I just think the way that his game is going to mature is going to kind of be seamless.
And when do you see a young kid like that, you know, grab a rebound and then run the fast break himself?
Yeah.
You know, usually a quick outlet pass or, you know, deep heave down the court. I mean, he grabbed a tough board last night, started sprinting towards midcourt, had the behind the back dribble.
Crazy.
And then picked up the assist with the pass. I mean, it's an incredible sequence from such a young player.
Playing with a lot of confidence. Right now, 410-583-1057 is the number. If you want to get in, talk Terps, want to talk Orioles or Ravens, we can do that as well. Of course, the guys are out in Sarasota, pitchers and catchers, and a couple of position players are out there early
Seems like a lot of them were there.
Yeah, it does seem like a lot of them are out there right now. So we did get to play a little bit of that Mike Elias audio. We'll play you some more. We'll start to take some of your calls as well. That's next here on The Fan.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Dave Matthews Band all the way up until 2 o'clock. 410-583-1057 is the number. We were just talking some Terps. Let's grab a call real quick. Let's go to Harry and Owens Mills. Harry, you're on the Fan.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call today. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. I've been telling everybody who would listen, I think actually Maryland has the best starting five in the country. Now, but you all did bring something up. But one thing that does concern me is the bench. And the reason why I mention that is when you look at the annals of college basketball history, there have been a number of teams who were very guard-oriented that have gone on to win a national championship. And there are two that come to mind for me. One is the 1997 Arizona Wildcats, who had Miles Simon, Mike Bibby, and Dickerson, but they also had Jason Terry coming off the bench. There was also the 2021 Baylor Bears, who had Gerard Butler, Macy O'Teague, and Davion Mitchell, and they had Adam Flagler coming off the bench. So I guess my concern is that let's say you have a game, because we've seen Gillespie not have the greatest games, and Rice, who's been very consistent lately. We don't have anybody who can really pick up where we have a scoring slack. Now, we have guys that can come in and play some defense and give you minutes to spell your team so they could finish out a game. But what happened to Chance? The guy that the transfer out of Loyola Marymount, was he still not fully recovered from that ACL?
You said Chance from, who was this?
Yeah, it was Chance, the guy that was transferred out of Loyola Marymount. His first name was Chance. I'm trying to remember his last name right now. He came in out of Loyola Marymount, and last offseason, prior to the season, he had a torn ACL. But I thought maybe he was fully recovered where he could actually contribute to this team. He's a guard.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. I haven't seen or heard from him to this point this year. So I'm assuming he's not there. Appreciate the call, though, Harry. But, yeah, I mean, it definitely, you get into the tournament, it's very guard-driven, no doubt about it. And you named some of those teams that have experienced that. And the good thing about the Terps is they have the guard play right now. They have the front court play. So they can beat you inside or out. All of these guys have been all the perimeter guys have been able to hit their outside shots, and they're shooting them efficiently. I mean, you go back to last night's game, and you feel good about the efficiency, almost 50% from downtown. Like I said, 14 for 18 from the line, 60%, almost 60% from the field. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. You're probably not going to lose many games, whether it's February or March, if you're shooting that efficiently. 410-583-1057 is the number. If you guys want to get in, just move into some Orioles real quick. We did get to hear from Mike Elias, who addressed the media yesterday. Let's play some more of that audio. Here's Mike Elias talking about Coby Mayo getting some looks in spring training.
I think he'll play some first base in camp. We were talking about it. I don't think that the playing time partitioning, particularly at first base with a number of guys, is going to necessarily be an indicator of what they're going to do throughout the season or where we see them. Some of it's just trying to get guys reps in camp and get them into lineups and games. But he'll be at first, he'll be at third, and he'll definitely be in the batter's box. And, you know, we'll see what he does. But I think the fact that he got his debut out of the way, I think it's a really good thing.
So that's kind of been the issue with Coby Mayo, is where are you playing him defensively? It seems like they can't find a spot to just put him at and let him stay there. Third base,
it's kind of occupied.
Yeah, and he's not great at third base.
Right.
He just isn't. First base would be ideal, but Mountcastle is still here, and I don't see a scenario where Mountcastle's not going to be almost an everyday player. You've got O'Hearn that can play first base if necessary. It just screams to me more. And how much is Coby Mayo going to DH? I don't know. It just screams to me that we may not see a lot of Coby Mayo until maybe they're forced to play him.
Right. I mean, I don't think he's in position to make the team out of spring.
No.
Barring some sort of catastrophic injury.
They don't even have a spot for him right now.
Yeah. And to be fair to him, you know, it called him up last year. You know, he's raking at AAA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just absolute missiles off the bat down there. I mean, what more does he have to do? He's kind of like Heston Kerstad.
Yep.
Where the gap between AAA and major leagues, if you needed any more evidence of how big that gap is, just look at these two guys. Or a lot of the Orioles prospects. Mm-hmm.
Holiday.
Yeah.
Holiday.
Yeah, I mean, there's been growing pains for everybody, but he's played in 17 games. You know, I'm not willing to make any judgments on him after that, same way we wouldn't make judgments on Holiday after 60 games. So you hope he gets a real chance somewhere. Starting to seem like that might be elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or he would be of better service to the Orioles as a trade piece. That's where his true value to the team would lie. I mean, him and Kerstad, again, have kind of been those two guys that just haven't been able to break through quite yet. I don't think you can keep both of them. I don't see any scenario moving forward where you can keep both of those guys. One of them has to be on the move at the deadline this year.
Now, is he a guy, I mean, do they do this in baseball where, you know, that they play the Coby Mayos and the Kersteds and play them a lot in spring training so people get a look at them to see? Because, you know, that's major, as close to major league as you can get, you know, in spring training. But because AAA, what is it, doesn't really tell you anything.
He's already checked that box.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, just in general, this is the time of year to get him a lot of those at-bats anyway, because they will see, to your point, they will see some major league pitchers on, you know, throughout the spring. But, yeah, this is also a showcase. You mm-hmm. know, what's the new game that they have? They've done it the last couple of years that prospect showcase that they do or something like that during the spring
like
training.
Their version of the in spring?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant like the All-Star break. They've got like their version of the Rising
Star.
Well,
I know they have that, but in the Orioles did it last year, I think against the Pirates maybe. It was in spring. They have like a prospect showcase. I'm gonna look it up.
Like a futures type thing?
Yeah.
Well, they do like split squad stuff where they play two games in one day.
Yeah, they had made a day of it in Major League Baseball to where it was like,
oh, yeah, that's right.
I can't forget their official title.
They show it on like MLB Network.
Yeah, and there was a couple of games that was lined up on that, and the Orioles were one of them. So, you know, games like that. But, yeah, I do think that they're going to do their best to advertise Mayo, and I agree. His worth to the Orioles right now is probably greater as a trade piece than it is a player as it sits today.
Because if he goes back to AAA and When does his value decrease on a trade bait?
He's probably still got a while there. I mean, he's 23.
Right.
You know, so he's still got some time. I mean, his value is kind of set in stone. You know, with baseball guys, with the highly coveted guys, I mean, what does he really have to show? He could really only damage his image by going out there and playing poorly. I I mean, if he goes out there and plays well, it doesn't increase his value. His value is already very high.
I think the problem for him is the same problem it is right now for the Orioles, is that for other teams as well, defense. Nobody's going to know where to put him defensively. Yeah. That's the, I mean, sure, you could just put him at first base, assuming you don't have anybody over there. But, yeah, I think that's the biggest issue, is that he just is kind of is floating in the gray area defensively right now. So that'll be the key thing for him, is to show that he can stick somewhere. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, keep it going with some of this Orioles talk. Ryan Mountcastle, his power has gone down since the left field wall moved back. Will it move up with the left field wall coming back in? We'll talk about it next here on The Fan. To move the left field wall back in about between 9 to 20 feet in some areas, but closer inside the field, which I'm sure is music to the ears of guys like Ryan Mountcastle, pretty much any right-handed power bat that comes to Camden Yards, but specifically Ryan Mountcastle, whose career has drastically changed with the movement of that left field wall. So many times you've seen Ryan Mountcastle hit a ball really well out to left field, and it looks like it's going to get out of there, and it falls just short, and you can see the disdain on his face. And you look at Mountcastle's numbers. He had 33 home runs in his first full season up here at the major league level back in 21, and from there it's just gone down to 22, 18, and then 13 last year. And he's been dealing with injuries as well. He had vertigo also. So it's been a lot that has gone into that. But no doubt the left field wall has kind of been its own personal destruction to Ryan Mountcastle and his offense. Are you expecting it to turn around with the left field wall coming in?
Well, I would think that mentally, when he gets up there, because he hadn't seen it yet, when he gets out there, he's going to like it, all right? And then, but then he's got to hit some home runs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's because right now he's got an excuse. After they put the wall up and everything, if he hits 13 again, then, you know, there's no more excuses.
Right, and I think there's some good mock-ups of kind of blueprints of how they mm-hmm. want this to look out there, and I kind of have to look at them and remind myself what this is exactly going to look like. With the wall last couple of years, really had that harsh kind of right angle there by the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting rid of that. It's a little smoothed out, a little more rounded. The wall's now shorter. Was 13 feet high. Now it's about 8 feet high. So maybe a chance to rob home runs again. I don't know if that's probably still higher than it was, you know, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we'll see. And it looks like it is farther in, closer to the bullpen. And then as you get more towards the left field foul pole, it's about 17 feet deeper, or maybe 10 feet deeper. So there's some new nuances to it. It feels like left center might be just an extension of the bullpen at this point. If you could muscle one into center field in right. the bullpen, you can put one in left center. And if you're trying to really go down the line there, maybe it's still a little tricky.
Yeah, that corner is still going to be a problem. It's still, you know, pretty far back, it looks like, even though they did bring it in. It's a little narrow in that corner. It's a little weird. And yeah, I mean, I'm expecting it, like you said, I think it will boost his confidence to see it moved in a little bit, but you still got to hit the ball out there. And look, I mean, what does Mountcastle's home run total going from 13 to maybe 25? Like, what does that do for the offense? Does that steal them a couple of games? We've talked a lot about them trying to replace some of that offense that was left behind by Anthony Santander, and it's going to take a couple of people. We're talking about 44 home runs out of the door. It's going to take a couple of people to fill that, but I think if Mountcastle can build his power numbers back up, that'd be great. Because, and to his credit, he's had the ability to kind of carry the lineup for a week or two without necessarily the power numbers. He still drives in runs. He's maybe, you know, in a sense that's kind of been the gift through all of this, is that it's forced him to hit to other areas of the field, put the ball in play, and driving runs that way. If he can now add more pop and more home runs to that total, I think that'd be great for the offense.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think it goes beyond him, too. Obviously, an increase in stats for him would be great. We'd all like to see that. We'd like to see him healthy as well. But I think it has a trickle-down effect, too. Last year, when he was banged up or just out of the lineup, they kind of had Ryan O'Hearn forced into playing every day. And Ryan O'Hearn's done great things the last couple of years for the Orioles. But when he got thrown into that everyday role where he had to man first base and get those at-bats every single day, he wasn't the same guy. O'Hearn's strength, I think, almost lies in his pinch hitting ability,
right.
Starting a couple days a week, you know, a little bit of versatility. He can play the outfield, but I mean, he's had some huge clutch at bats, but when he started getting extended at bats, maybe started to show a little more inconsistency. So if Ryan Mountcastle's out there every day, you don't have to worry about that.
Well, the other thing too, where you can get some homers, but you know, if Rutschman can pick it up a little bit, Holiday's going to hit some home, you know, I mean, he's going to hit some home runs. So those guys can help. Are you going to make up all 44? I mean, somebody would have to be really make a huge jump to be able to, you know, like it would be a, you know, if they were doing that in the first half, they'd probably be in consideration for the All-Star game.
Yeah, no doubt. Also looking at, you know, with the left field wall coming in, it's going to change some things defensively as well. And Colton Kowser, I've heard him talk a little bit about, you know, what those how those changes will impact him being out in left field. You know, the last couple of years, you've almost felt like you need two center fielders out there, you know, because left field has pretty much so much ground to cover out there. You need center field quality, center field speed. But now, not saying that you don't, but with it coming in a little bit, you don't necessarily need two Cedric Mullins out there, two Cedric Mullins types of guys. But it is going to be unique for some of these guys that have gotten used to those dynamics in left field now, which changed. And the like you said, the bullpen, the part in front of the bullpen kind of extends out a little bit. I wonder how long it's going to take some of these guys to get used to running around out there.
Yeah, it'll be a bit of an adjustment period, I'm sure. But, I mean, if he was a Gold Glove caliber left fielder with as deep as it was last year, I think he'll get the hang of it pretty quickly. The only issue I could see, again, with the dimensions here, and you know, look up the picture if you haven't seen it, because I can't describe it that well. But if one kind of got into that corner last year by the bullpen and rattled around or bounced around, it's still closer to center field where Cedric could kind of sprint over and be a safety valve if Kowser went down or something happened. Now that angle or corner, if you will, is more shaded towards the left field foul pole, that's even more distance for Cedric to have to cover. Could create some interesting problems.
Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll switch gears, talk some Ravens. Rashad Bateman had a really nice season this year. After being talked up all offseason last year, they backed it up, got him much more involved. What will he do next season? We'll talk about that next here on The Fan. Rashad Bateman posted career highs in yardage with 756, career highs in touchdowns as well with 9. Conveniently enough, he had more catches his rookie season. 46 his rookie season, 45 this past season, and that was only with 12 games played his rookie year. And if I'm mistaken, that was a weird year in general for the Ravens. I think there were a lot of injuries that year. Tyler Huntley's throwing the ball to him, but he was getting it. But bounced back in a big way this year for Rashad Bateman, really showed his ability to be that deep threat that the Ravens desperately needed. He continued to win his one-on-one battles. He was healthy again. Mm-hmm. What are you looking for next season from Rashad Bateman?
Biggest thing that I want to see from Bate this year, I want to see him get in a weight room because I think he needs to be stronger, and I think that'll help him. You know, I think that'll help him a lot too. Because his body control is outstanding and his ability to get in out of the breaks is outstanding. I mean, that's been well talked about, you know, he creates separation. Because I think if he gets stronger too, Cordell, I think his yak yards will be up. Because he only had like 160 yak yards, so he didn't have a ton of yak yards. And I think that needs to get better. Because he's got the ability to make people miss. I just think like some of the times he just plays light. And, you know, adding some weight in the weight room, I think, would be very beneficial. Caught the ball extremely well in his hands. And with the confidence that he has now, I'm expecting, I mean, he had 756 yards and averaged 16.8. So if he can average, you know, similar numbers there and, you know, take it to like 900 yards or something, Cordell, in about, what would it be, 55, 60 catches? I think that's very doable. Just because, you know, we talk about where can this offense improve? Where can Lamar improve? I think passing yard, he'll go from 41 to 45, I think, this year. Mm-hmm. That would be my bet. And then where does it come from? I think the two biggest guys that will benefit from that will be likely and Bateman. I think those two guys will benefit from Lamar adding 400 yards, you know, to his passing numbers for the season. But I like Bateman. I've always liked Bate. You know, I mean, like when I watched him at the University of Minnesota, his the COVID year, he sucked.
Mm-hmm.
Like he gained
he was
a bunch of weight,
in, halfway out.
Yeah, like he gained a bunch of weight. He just because the year before, I remember Mel Kiper telling me. Mel said he's top 10 pick. You know, coming out because his the year before COVID, he had a phenomenal year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the COVID year wasn't great. And then you know, the Ravens got him. I think he's got a lot of gifts. He's got a lot of things going for him. But as a receiver, if you've got hands and body control and the ability to get in and out of cuts, and total confidence right now, I think sky's the limit for him. I think we'll see, Cordell, when we see him at camp and those type of things, we'll see a guy that, you know, really feels like he belongs and, you know, may walk with a puffed out chest a little bit, like feeling good about himself when he walks out there.
Yeah, I mean, look, why not? You know, you finally get to see what the offense looked like when they do commit to him. A big part of what we wanted him to do going into this past season was earn the trust of his quarterback.
Yep.
He earned it. Lamar threw him the ball quite a bit. They connected on a lot of those deep passes that they weren't connecting on last year, and that was really the difference in how we viewed Bate. Honestly, that was the big difference.
And the body language.
Yeah. Well, that was a huge change for him. You didn't really notice a lot of pouting from him this year.
Nope.
And he was always in good spirits. And to his credit, you know, Bateman, who early in his career, and probably for good reason, wasn't the most available. But this year he was a lot more available than he has been in the past. So you could definitely tell he felt good about himself this year.
What kind of guy is he, Cordell?
Similar to what you see.
Quiet.
Yeah, he's a quiet, very chill guy. He seems low key. I've talked to him a couple of times, you know, outside of the interview, but he's a very just mild mannered, you know, chill guy. That's just what he is. If you follow him on social media or anything like that, and you see him, he's very low key. One example is after the Giants game. After the bye weekend, he's kind of, I guess, getting heckled by some Giants fans on his way to the team bus. And he's very chill about it. He goes over there, he talks to the dude, they're getting into a debate, and he ends it like, dude, you're a Giants fan. You know, that's kind of all you got to say these days. But that's who he is. And I actually talked to him about that. He's like, yeah, man, I don't mind getting into it with him. I'll go back and forth. So. But he definitely seems like a guy that's comfortable in his own skin, and that's a big part of his brand is being yourself.
Who's he hang with?
You know, a lot of those guys all hang together with their respective position groups and stuff. So Nelson Aguilar's locker is right there. Isaiah Likely locker is right there. So, you know, deals with those guys a lot, but he comes over, talks to Lamar a lot. I mean, they all kind of jump all over the place.
I'll be anxious to – when do we see videos or whatever, Cordell, of him, Lamar, and Zay down there catching balls in Florida? Another month, probably?
If ever. If ever. I'm not going to hold my breath on that. We didn't get any of that stuff last year.
No, we didn't.
You know, so, hey – And I always say this, we don't know, you know, we see those videos and those videos make it seem like guys are working or whatever. They're working in that moment. Those videos don't make or break seasons. They didn't do it last year. They went on to have a great offensive year. You know, I'm not holding my breath that we'll see it this year, because like Lamar said, people have to leave their states. And it seems like certain people don't want to leave their states, him included. It seems like Lamar included doesn't want
to
leave.
He didn't want to go to Orlando.
Yeah. Well, that's up the road. But, you know, that's like going to Six Flags or something while you're here, I guess. Like, if you're from Florida, you're like, I'm not going to Orlando.
Well, the other thing that I will be anxious to hear at some point, Cordell, is did they have surgery?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we'll find out.
Because Harps, remember, he didn't count it out.
They made it seem like they didn't have. He didn't count it out. They also, you know, let it be known they didn't know at the time of who, you know, from the team in general, who all would need anything major. So we'll see. You know, maybe that'll come out by the time we talk to those guys again in a couple of weeks. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll talk some Ravens with Jonah Schaefer. He covers the team for the Baltimore Banner. We'll start to get a big picture outlook on this offseason. What is Jonas's expectations for Rashad Bateman next season? We'll ask him next here on The Fan.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.